Thanks for tuning in to I'm Not Okay, a podcast. I'm Stormy.
I'm Elena.
And we're here to say stuff about music and talk to people, and it'll be a good time.
That's what we do, huh?
Yes.
Ooh.
I didn't have anything planned for what I was going to say.
Well, I did just tell you that we're going to introduce ourselves at the top of the episode.
Yeah, I didn't prepare myself for that initially, but now I'm here for it. We'll start doing it that way so we don't forget every episode to introduce the podcast.
Well, I should say while we're on it that the song playing us in today was Wolves Outside the Door by Benchmarks. And what does that mean, Stormy?
It means we have Todd and Jack on the episode today.
It's the Toddcast 2!
Electric Boogaloo!
Executive produced by Jack.
Yes.
Oof, we're going to have to keep this brief today because we talked to them forever.
Forever. And like, honestly, this is even cut down a lot shorter because we were on the call for what, 2 hours?
2 hours. I think we wrapped up and then we spent another 45 minutes
yeah,
on the
phone.
Yeah,
just hanging
with them.
Out.
I just...
Having chill times.
I can't say it enough. I love them.
They're so much fun. I love them.
Yeah. I wanted to speak for them that they're just willing to come on and bullshit with us and stay on for 45 minutes after the show's ended just so we can catch up and be idiots.
Yeah.
Really.
And like, it's to the point where they're actually our friends now, which is really cool. Like, it's that transition from a guest to actual friendship is always really cool to me. And I feel like it happens in between the first time we have someone on and the second time, especially with a lot of those where it's like, we actually keep in touch in between
right.
the recordings. And so it was fun to actually catch up with them, like not in person necessarily, but
sort of in person.
Yeah. Just as close to in person as possible.
Like I've been watching you on Facebook for the last year and yeah, we'll exchange messages here and there.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
So that was really special for us. And we're really excited to get this interview rolling here because
it's so good.
I can't talk about them without smiling. They're just like such great conversationalists and everything they say is so well thought out. And I don't want to say profound because that sounds like I'm like elevating them onto a pedestal that they probably don't want to be on. But they're just thinkers
they're just,
and they make me think. And it's always a good time.
Well, and they're fun and they're excited about what they do. And that just makes it way more fun to talk about. They're just good. They're good dudes. That's all there is to it.
It's just super nice to be able to get off calls. And I'm speaking generally here because we've had such positive experiences. I can't say that enough with pretty much everybody that we've had on. But it's nice to get off a call and feel energized rather than drained.
Yeah, because I mean, sometimes it does feel like work when you're talking to somebody who doesn't really talk back. And so when you have a conversation and then you get off and you're just like, yeah, I feel good. This was fun.
Exactly.
It changes it a little bit and makes it more exciting the next time we get to talk to them, you know, just because it's almost like I don't want to say this in a weird way because like the way I'm about to phrase it is going to sound weird, but it's like that coming home feeling after you've been talking to like new people for a while and then you come back and talk to like that old friend.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. And
exactly.
It's really cool.
And it's grounded and... Honestly, like I was telling them, I'm not sure if this actually made it into the episode, but it was super special for me to get them back now that we've been doing this for a while. And I feel like I'm no longer asking just those surface level questions, like especially because they've already been on with us. They've already talked about their local music scene and like the background of the band and everything. We've really got to focus on their new album and their thoughts like about the world and everything. I just feel like we got to a whole new level with this interview than we did last year just because... We've already got a working relationship with them.
Yeah, and it makes it easier to get in an actual conversation because we already know them, you know? And so when we talk, it's a little easier, especially for me because I'm, you know, I'm not like the actual interviewer person here. Elena does the interview. I don't know if anybody has noticed that, but Elena does the interview. I just like, I'll interject like thoughts or like if I have a question that comes up, I'll ask it. But like, I don't write any of my stuff down. Elena's the note taker. I'm just along for the ride to be like comic relief and commentary. But
you're a riffer.
Yeah.
That's I can't riff. I go off of organized notes.
Yeah,
you're the Henry to my Marcus.
Oh my God. Oh no. I never thought I was gonna be Henry Zebrowski, but here we are. I'm not nearly as funny as Henry Zebrowski, though.
Yeah, it's hard to beat.
He's so funny.
You could be Ben Kissel.
I'll take Ben Kissel.
Anyway, we should probably get on track here because yes. We just spent 5 minutes talking about the interview that people are about to listen to.
You want to talk about new music?
Let's talk about new music.
Okay, so my favorites from this week, and I know I bring them up a lot, but Lilac Kings, they dropped a song called 1985, and it's so good. I love them, so I want to get them on at some point because they are so good.
I'll reach out to them.
Okay. And then Jackson Wang dropped a song called Pretty Please, and it's totally in English, and it's gorgeous. And then I guess my other favorite was Paris dropped an album called Use Me.
I haven't actually listened to that yet. I'm not going to lie. I didn't listen to a lot of music between now and Friday. It's been 3 days now that we're recording. Just because I've been busy. But I did finally get around to AJR's Bummerland.
I have strictly listened to AJR this week. Like, I'm not even kidding. I listened to the new music on Friday, and then I was like, nope, back to AJR.
AJR.
I've only been listening to AJR.
I don't know how they can make a quarantine song sound so upbeat and optimistic and happy, but, like, I...
Well, have you seen... There's some stuff on the Instagram where... Is it... What is his name?
The behind the scenes?
No. Not Which behind the scenes. It was the... It's the one where he's talking about what went into the production of...
Oh, gotcha. I didn't see that one.
It was Ryan talking about the production of Bummerland. You need to go watch it because the reason I love AJR so much is obviously I like the music. I like the songs and all that. But what I like most is their production. It is so interesting to see how they do stuff and like what they actually use. Cause like they essentially took a vocal line, changed it into a trumpet, and then changed it into a mandolin. He said that they had been working on that transition for a while, and then he said that this is the time that they got it perfectly exactly where they wanted to. And it's like, it almost blends together so well that you can't even tell it's changing unless you're paying attention to it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So cool.
I still can't get over their parts in their live sets where they break down a song and actually like describe literally what went in track by track to each song as they're playing it live.
Yeah, and that's essentially kind of what he was showing there. He talks about like the choral part that they did, and he used stuff from other songs that they've done. But then they had their family and girlfriends and friends help with a lot of the other parts because they couldn't get actual musicians to help them during quarantine.
Right.
Anyway,
that's incredible.
Yeah, it was just really cool. Anyway, this turned into the AJR cast, and that's not what it's about, but
it's the Todd cast.
It's the Todd cast. We need to respect that. Let's go talk to Todd and Jack.
We never knew about the ghosts along the roadside that we stumbled right past years ago, not looking up as we walked by, and they followed us home in our steps. They fell behind, and all the things that we tried to ignore haunt us in our later lives, always searching for an answer.
So first of all, welcome to Toddcast round two. Obviously.
Oh, that's right.
Return of the Todd.
I like that one.
Todd's Revenge.
I feel like we need Jack somewhere in there.
No, behind the scenes. I'm the executive producer of the Toddcast.
Okay.
All right. We'll take it.
So I feel like I should say, just starting off, congratulations are in order because as of this week, it's going to be last week by the time this airs, but you all signed a publishing deal with Schubert Music. So how did that come about?
That is an interesting thing where basically a guy I used to work with at a small music distribution company in Nashville, I don't know, 10 years ago now, He's a dude that does consulting for Schubert Music. He used to be in the biz. He used to like kind of run a bunch of record labels in town, smaller stuff. He was not necessarily a big wig, but he was like a guy around town. He knew what he was doing. He was working with me at this place for a while. We just became friends and we both bailed on this company because it sucked. We just kept in touch over the years and he knew I was writing songs and doing stuff. And he called me literally like 2 months ago. He was like, Todd, you're still doing this thing. I follow you online. I see your songs. I see what's going on. I'm working with this company, Schubert. They're European, but they're doing, they're trying to expand and get some Nashville writers and things like that. And he was like, are you interested? I said, yeah, sure. He said, send me some songs and send me like kind of what, you know, BMI is working with you on. BMI is the performance rights organization that I'm with as a songwriter. And he was like, okay, I think we can probably like work with this and generate it into some income for you. And I was like, well, essentially anything is better than now because like I make about $3 a month off my publishing. So you can take 10% of that. And if you can make something out of it, that's great. So it was kind of a no lose situation with that, but we're excited. It's something new that we've never done before. It's some, maybe one other person in our corner to help generate some revenue out of the songs.
Absolutely.
We'll see what happens. Honestly, it's also, I know what it is, but I don't really know what it is. You know what I mean? I just know that it's someone helping.
So, and I have to say, like, you know, we have done things like similar to this in the past that are kind of like the sort of experiments in a sense, like, you know, just trying different things and being open to opportunities, like being the kind of band that we are. You don't necessarily think about like sync licensing, you know, like, you know, placement and, you know, movies and commercials and things like that. But, you know, if there are people out there, you know, willing to kind of do the lead work and try to get exposure for your music and generate money for you, you know, by all means, you know, we're happy to let them try and to contribute to that.
Yeah, absolutely. How is that going to change like the day to day that you guys operate with as far as the band goes?
Doesn't.
Not so much.
Not at all.
they've got a piece of every song that we've done since the Dirty Birds record, which is 2013. So they are working with our catalog from then till now to try to pitch it and make something happen with it. And then also like to try to get like songwriting opportunities just outside of the band stuff, just collaborations and things like that to see where it goes and see if we can, you know, it's Nashville. So there's a lot of songwriters on here. If they think that, you know, the benchmarks thing could contribute to this song by this artist or something like that, you know, we'll see what happens. Nothing's happened yet. You know, it's super fresh. So we'll kind of just see where it goes.
I'm just going to say, if I hear y'all like in a movie, I'm going to freak out like in the theater. I'll be like, I know them.
Now, before you say that, you have to think about what kind of movie is it going to be and what's going to be happening on screen when you hear it.
Honestly, what's going to happen is we are going to super sell out and start writing songs about trucks. Record is going to be pure Broadway country. It's going to be great.
I actually think that we could, by putting our song in a Ford commercial, we could actually bankrupt the company overnight. Like that would... That would tank the business so fast.
It would just take my car away from me.
License revoked.
Yeah.
So, okay, that actually like raises a totally random question that I was obviously not planning on asking. But if you could have one of your songs put into like any sort of movie or any existing movie, what would it be and which song would it be?
Any existing movie?
Or you know, just theoretically.
Yeah.
Whatever.
The business part of me is like, well, I think TV is where the money is now, but
you can pick a show.
My wife and I just finished like all the Avengers movies and all the Marvel stuff, and I wasn't like super into it at first, and then I got really, really into it. Now I would say, like, you know, being in the pivotal emotional scene in Endgame would be pretty awesome. And I don't even know what song that would be. Maybe it would be Wolves or something. But that would be cool. Like some like big blockbuster movie. But then the other half of me is like, the art side is like, oh no, it should be in, you know, some quirky Zooey Deschanel movie or something.
Something really dark, like Trainspotting or something.
Oh, yeah,
oh my
yeah,
God.
No, I actually, like, I love this game, and I play this in my head all the time, hearing a song and trying to envision, like, at what point in a movie it would be playing. Like, you know, kind of like it's like iconic sequences, like this is when, like, the ragtag team assembles and they start putting together their plan to rob the bank or something like that.
I think maybe we would be good montage music.
Like getting ready for the big 80s heister.
I'm thinking like 80s like junior high baseball team is out of shape, and then they get the old has-been coach to come in and whip him into shape, and so it's like just Technicolor is the soundtrack of like these little kids doing push-ups.
Maybe something. I don't know. I'm picturing like a makeover sequence for like an awkward teenage boy, like going to
that's probably like, the most accurate.
Right.
I like all of the
what answers, a visual.
To be honest.
All right, so going back to the first episode that we had you guys on, which actually it's a year this month. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
I saw that because that's the last time I used Skype.
Fair enough. If we're the only reason that you have to use Skype, then I'm happy for you, my friend.
It's still on my computer, just in case another Todd cast comes
just
along.
Waiting. Are they going to call us back?
We might as well just make it a tradition. Once a year, gotta have a podcast.
September.
I sit at my computer, is like, do you think they're going to call today?
So last time we had you on, you guys had briefly mentioned this new album, and I think I didn't go back and listen to the episode today. I really should have, but I believe it was in reference. I think we were talking about AFI or something, and you said that you were deriving some influences from that. But it sounded at the time like you guys had a really relatively good idea of what was going on with this album. So how long have you been sitting on most of these songs?
Man, the first song we wrote for this one was Lead the Light On. And we wrote that song before the last album came out. So we wrote that song in 2016-ish.
I think it was 2017.
Maybe 2017. Yeah. But you were still living off of Whitebridge.
Yeah, and that was 2017.
Because we wrote it at your house over there, or we started writing it at your house over there. And then probably the last bit of songs for this one came together probably last year. It's kind of been an evolving thing as we recorded. It wasn't necessarily that we had new songs as the process went on, but the songs themselves are at least 2 years old. And then just because of our recording process, it took that long to put together.
And they
evolved with it too.
We've gotten more disciplined over time about trying to kind of come up with more ideas than we need and kind of cull the herd before we actually start recording. Yes. Knowing that even one of those may get scrapped during the process. And, you know, it's always interesting to me which songs come together most quickly and the ones that take kind of longer to come to fruition, and how the ones that you're really enamored with early in the process don't end up being the ones that you love at the very end. And how some of them just take a lot more kind of finesse, you know, because sometimes it's like, you know, something is, you know, minute as like the right, you know, the right keyboard part or the right kind of lead guitar lick or something to make a song come together for you. And I don't know, but I always love the ones that come together quickly and kind of project this sense that like they are what they are and don't mess with them. You know, like they almost fight back a little bit.
And I think like two good examples of that. I think Technicolor is one that just kind of was what it was. I don't know if you agree with that, Jack. But for me, it just like that was like the previous record with Sharks and Minnows. Like that song, it just it just existed. It came to fruition on a run, and then I came home, demoed it, and like that was how the song was going to sound. The opposite end, I think, on this record, The Reap is a song that we kind of demoed together over at my house, and then we thought we had it together, and then we recorded it, and we weren't quite really happy with it until Jack did some magic and wrote some good keyboard parts, and we kind of figured out
there are a couple
a different bass line and things like that.
Yeah, a couple of songs that we kind of rewrote over the course of a couple of years. And the it's funny you mentioned Technicolor, because the thing I remember most about writing that song was, you know, in the end, this like big kind of breakdown section where there's like, you know, this big, you know, kind of soaring guitar solos and stuff. I remember thinking, I don't care what else happens in this song, I'm gonna play this drum lick right here. I'm gonna go whatever else is fun.
But if and it ruled.
And it did. That was the exact lick I played. But yeah, I mean, that song, I don't think of it so much as, this is going to sound so stupid, as writing songs, as like finding songs. Like the song kind of exists in the ether, and you're just trying to figure, like you're just trying to find it.
You know? I kind of like that. Like it's like when... I can't remember what movie it is, but they're like talking about sculpting with like marble and how the statue's already in there. You just have to find it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's exactly. It makes me think the same thing. Like, I like that. I like that.
Well, and like if you want to take like a kind of a spiritual bent on it, it's kind of like, you know, if you think, we don't, you know, invent melodies, you know, there's like not really anything genuinely new under the sun. You know, so, like I said, you're just searching for something that exists and just trying to represent it in a tangible form for like posterity, basically.
It's basically alchemy.
Yeah.
So I like that too.
Yeah, me too. So let me ask you guys, like, how do you determine what the final endpoint is for a song then, if they're so constantly evolving?
That's a great question.
And if you know the answer, please tell us.
We're definitely the kind of band that likes to take a song and listen to it and be like, well, we could probably put a guitar harmony on that part. And we could maybe do that. Maybe that's also just kind of me wanting to put a guitar harmony on everything.
Right.
But you can, there's always something else you can put on, especially now with like, we record on computers. Like there's virtually unlimited amount of things that can exist on this audio file. But knowing when to like pump the brakes, which is kind of what Jack's job is as the producer.
I mean, mixing is the exact opposite. Like there's a very finite amount of stuff that you can fit into a mix. And that's sort of the tension there is you throw all these ideas at the wall, but they can't all come across. Like they don't all translate in the mix and they don't all have impact. So, the skill is actually knowing what to cut and what to remove. And like for us, I think like a song like Wolves was an exercise in addition by subtraction. Because like all the parts that you hear at the end of the song existed in the original recording, but as we were arranging it, we kind of deconstructed it and said, you know, what's the most kind of basic, like atomic thing that we want to come across in the beginning of the song. So it ended up just being bass and drums and nothing else. And then like the pre-chorus will like, now we can layer in some acoustic guitar and,
small little melodic ideas too. Like the guitar solo where it's just that, da-na-na-na-na-na-na. It was a very, that was already there. But before we had something different in the chorus where it was a little bit more full, a little more complicated, a little busier. And then we just kind of brought that, you know, bridge guitar solo idea into the chorus and said, well, what if we just play that softer? And it's super simple. It's just right there, but it keeps that melodic idea. And I don't know, you know, just kind of little things that start as one thing and then in a sense, devolve, but it's really evolving.
Well, and then, of course, by the end of the song, it really is just the kitchen sink. It's just like, well,
yeah,
you're like, we recorded this part. We think it sounds awesome. We're just going to, you know, throw it in there.
So after all of this, like, I mean, obviously, you've put a tremendous amount of work into the album. Where did your head go in March when everything went to shit, so to speak?
Well, we're in a unique situation where both of us had new children in that, you know, February, March timeline. So I think, one, we were incredibly relieved that the thing was actually finished before, not only before kids being born, but and also before COVID, before all that. And we were kind of thankful that we at least had somewhat of a plan and it was out of our hands a little bit. But, you know, the big things that COVID affects are obviously touring and playing live shows at all. And that was sort of, I don't know, it's one of those things where, like, we're in a situation right now where we're not necessarily going to be on the road for 6 weeks at a time like we would have in the past. So it doesn't hurt the tour part as much, but it does hurt the part that, like, who knows when these songs will ever be played live at this point. Because we're not, the way the live music thing is evolving right now is, you know, these drive-in shows or these, other than the live stream things, which I don't know if you saw Facebook's terms that they just put out, they're doing away with essentially commercial live streaming. Like, you can't accept money over their platform or something like that. That's a whole nother conversation.
What? Yeah, that's insane.
Why? Yeah. Like, is there a purpose there?
I would imagine that Facebook is designing some sort of platform to get a cut of what's happening. Like, built-in stage it or something like that.
Well, because people have been switching over to streaming on Facebook instead of streaming on Twitch.
Right.
So... because they don't, it doesn't cost anything and you can just make money and you get all of that. Right. So I would assume it has something to do with like the gaming streamers and all that stuff, because they're like just making money with nobody getting it cut off the top, essentially. So it's probably part of it.
Yeah. And I mean, and so all that to say that, like, you know, it wasn't like the, you know, the quarantine started and, you know, it just took all the wind out of our sails. But there was this kind of this moment for pause when it was like, well, you know, I know what a release cycle looks like in the past. What does it look like now and for us? And, you know, I don't know if you'll call it a good thing, but interesting side effect is that there's kind of been a bit of a vacuum for, like, you know, like long form music releases a little bit. You know, typically at this part of the summer, I think we would be competing with a lot of content and a lot of events and things for attention.
Especially in our genre.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Right. But now, you know, there was, you know,
there's a lot of content. There's a lot of things happening. There's a lot of the live online things. And there's people are putting out like kind of their bedroom singles. But we have an album that we've been working on for 2 years. And for better or for worse, we're just going to put it out.
Right. And it was nice to be able to say, like, here's something, you know, at least by our standards, it's like polished and like, you know, that we're really excited and doesn't feel like a concession on our part. It's like, no, this is, here's... here's our art, and you know, and we hope you enjoy it.
I mean, not to get too, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but I also, like, from the lyrics standpoint, I also kind of felt maybe it was our responsibility to put something out, both political and just the state of the world.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think about my kids and Jack's kid, and you know, we're at a really interesting time in, you know, human history. And I'd be remiss if in, you know, 15 years, like, Goldie, my daughter, like, it's like, well, Dad, what was going on around then? And what were you doing? I would be like, no, I was just kind of sitting on this album that I made because I wanted to wait till it was a little more profitable. Like, no, I need to say something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a chance to go on record. No pun intended. And
naive dad joke.
And to like, you know, to identify where you stand on, you know, on a range of, you know, socio-political issues, and also to document, you know, personally and emotionally where you were at that stage in your life. Yeah. And I mean, the record is dedicated to our kids. You know, like you said, I don't think we wanted it to become any more out of its time than it was already, having been, you know,
sure, 2 years or whatever.
Yeah, 2 years in the making. Yeah, because I mean, I think that's what our music has always been, is a kind of a document or a snapshot of a period in our lives. And so it's important for us to get it out there so that we can start working on the next snapshot.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
So sort of to that point, have the songs changed in meaning to you at all over the course of this past, like, 6 months, a year?
Some of them came true.
Yeah, unfortunately, they've become more poignant than they were when we wrote them.
Yeah.
Our Finest Hour was written after the Women's March, you know, 100 years ago. Yeah. What feels like 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just slowly taken on, you know, more and more of how I feel about a range of things. Yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's a double-edged thing. Like, I'm glad that I have it on record what I have to say about this situation, but I wish that it didn't keep coming true over and over again, you know. I would rather there be progress than for my song to be cool, I guess.
Yeah, one of those situations where you'd rather be wrong.
Yeah, you know.
Like, oh man, that was crazy that we thought that was going to happen.
Right.
So I was actually going to wait to ask this question until the very end, but it feels like it fits really appropriately right here, because I've been holding out messaging you guys on social media to talk about this, but I've been listening to Our Undivided Attention, like, on repeat since quarantine started, because it feels so, like, lyrically wise. And I was listening to Let You Down recently, and it just resonates so much harder now with this idea of, like, divisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's a big question outside of an individual scope, but how do you think that we can all work to love thy neighbor and foster community during these times where, like, shit like political leanings and even just, like, mask wearing are tearing us in different directions?
That's the million trillion dollar question, and we're all in debt for it. This kind of, and back, not to get off of Let You Down and to
no, take it wherever you want.
You know, that other song I wrote that's on the new one that I was just talking about that I can't remember the name, Our Finest Hour. In my mind, Our Finest Hour is almost like a spiritual sequel to Let You Down. Mm-hmm. It's like a little bit more militant.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, like the hardened version. Like if Let You Down were a person and it lived through the last 4 years, like that's what
it would have turned it.
That's,
would have
yeah,
turned
that's
into.
Essentially what it is, you know. But in this is kind of what Our Finest Hour is about, and it piggybacks off of what Let You Down is. Is like, we are a band of essentially suburban raised straight white men. So my voice on the subject, while my intentions can be as good and pure as I want them to be, I don't want to clutter that ecosystem. My voice, I want to lift up other voices. And how I, in that can go a number of ways. In my mind, how I want that to go, in my personal life. Jack and I kind of live in the same area of town, and my neighborhood is like, you know, I'm probably one of the few kind of white people living in my block. And we've noticed in this, like during the quarantine pandemic situation, you know, we're all home all the time. So everyone on the street is home all the time, unless they're an essential worker doing whatever. So we've noticed we've become closer with our neighbors, even though we're not like seeing them, but we're seeing them more than we were when we were all just going to work and going home and doing that. And I think what I envision hoping that this builds into as, you know, hopefully things get better, is I want, and like, it just starts in your local community. It's like, for me, it starts on my street. It starts with my neighbor. I need to be better to them before I can be better to, you know, the population of everyone that's, you know, in some sort of trouble or something.
I agree with that. Like, I think when you, like when you're constantly living in a national and even international mindset, you know, that kind of distracts you from your actual sphere of influence.
Yeah.
You know, which is much, much smaller for most people. And so I tend to find myself getting, you know, really emotionally worked up and I mean, rightly so. I think the emotions are valid, but they're not necessarily productive sometimes when they're directed at you know, entities or organizations that don't care about me. Yeah,
they don't care about what I tweeted at them as much as I would like them to think they do.
Right. So there's like an element of pragmatism where, you know, I told Todd the other day that, you know, so especially as a musician or as an artist, you know, you're really cognizant of the passage of time and your age and how you fit into kind of the artistic landscape. Like, it's like we play rock music, right? And so like, and not just like rock music, but like kind of, you know, like a more contemporary flavor, like some people will call it pop punk or something like that. But
melodic punk is what
melodic punk. That's,
I liked that term. Someone called us that, and I was like, "That's the one genre."
That feels good.
I like that too. Yeah,
that doesn't feel derogatory. and yeah, most times when people like give us a genre, it's like a slander of some kind. but anyway, like you know, you're aware that you're getting older, and that maybe like you're not as relevant anymore, or like you're kind of playing out like music outside of your age bracket or whatever. But I did tell Todd that I thought, well, you know, getting older, you know, we're not young or beautiful, so we're much less likely to be exploited for our art.
Yeah. And, I like that.
And we're much more likely to be able to have actual like influence in our communities in important ways. You know what I mean? That actually have like implications for, you know, other young people. I was like, so that seems like a fair trade-off to me.
Mm-hmm. Going back to real quick, since we kind of moved off the subject, I just want to go back to that thing that you said earlier, Todd, about now I forgot what song we were talking about.
Let You Down or
Our Finest Hour.
Our Finest Hour is the one I was thinking of. Have you ever thought about like doing a music video that would lift up the voices of those people to that song? Or
yeah, I mean, we have so many music video ideas in our head. If we had the right friends, or if we had the means, I think we all of them.
Yeah, music video.
Specifically, that song would probably be a lot of footage we collected at the Nashville protests, you know?
Yeah, because I think that, especially in that aspect, like, I know this is the one that stands out the most. Well, they changed their name to The Chicks now, but they did that. They did that song, and it was all protest video. And it was amazing. So I was just like that going off of that kind of idea, I think that definitely helps actually raise the voices of the people that you're trying to support, I guess.
Well, and so I think it would have to be something that. Like that. It definitely wouldn't be our faces on a screen for 3 minutes.
Yeah, I would want no part of us to be in that video other than just the audio. Like, I don't even want you to see what I'm playing on guitar, which I'm really proud of. It would have to, the point of that whole thing is to not look at me, to look at other people.
At everything else, yeah. Yeah, I was just curious because you had made you had made that point. So I was just curious if you'd thought about it at all. Because I think that would be a really good one to do something like that with.
Like, I don't even know if I would describe these as like proper protest songs, although they're
I don't think that they are necessarily. Well, I think it's the heart behind it. It's not necessarily that the song has to be a protest song, but the point that you're trying to make with it.
But it is it's through a personal lens, looking, looking at societal issues.
Yeah.
It's these times they are a changing, or it's not these times they are a changing. I'm trying to think of the other Bob Dylan song that is indirectly addressing it. I'm blanking, so we're gonna move on.
Okay.
Well, fair thanks, enough. Guys. I'm sorry. That was definitely a heavy hitter. That's why I saved it for the end. But it just it seems relevant at the moment.
I think it's important to talk about it, though. I think that's kind of, that's important. This form that we have those conversations and.
I've been dying to talk to you about it for 2 or 3 months now. So, you guys are just so well articulated and.
It's funny you say that because in my mind, I'm like, am I talking too much? Am I I don't know how to talk to people because of quarantine anymore. So I'm just self-conscious of it.
Yeah, I will say I switched from an office job to a retail job, right when everything opened back up in Indiana.
Oh, no.
And so I was sitting there trying to relearn how to speak, which was fun.
Yeah. You guys should
have
heard me on
our real thing.
Yeah. Our last interview. How did I talk, Stormy? Was it like this the whole time?
She was using her AP interviewer voice. It was strange.
And we got off and I was like, I don't even know what happened there.
Well, now I have to go back and listen.
It's funny. It's a stark contrast to the rest of the episode, which is the really horrifying part. It's two different people.
Well, she was just talking to me in the rest of the episode, so she didn't feel the need to be high energy and.
That'd be a great prank to play. That kind of makes me think of that scene from Super Troopers when they're interjecting the meows.
Meow.
You do the whole first half of the episode talking one way, and then and then drop the accent completely.
What's in Parks and Rec when Aziz does a British accent for to impress that girl for 2 days and then he can't get out of it, so he just decides to get out of it and not address it. And she's like, didn't you have an accent?
So good.
Oh, I'm obsessed. All right. So let's get back to the album. Thank you again for fielding that question.
We will indulge all of your sidebars.
All right, cool. So, Todd, I reached out to you earlier in the summer for an overview of the musical influences that went out into this album. But you gave me, the best spread of artists that I would never imagine would go together. It was The Weaker Thens, AFI, Gin Blossoms, The Hold Steady, and Iron Maiden.
Oh, don't worry, we argued about it a lot.
Yeah, honestly, there were some more bands on that list, and I gave it to Jack in... Take my word vomit and make it into something. So we trimmed the list down, but I think Counting Crows is in there. There is some other kind of off the wall.
Well, and he's not wrong. They're all in there somewhere. It's just just trying to figure out what is most representative or what other people are most likely to hear in the music. You know what I mean? To actually hear the influence.
Can you detail some of the specifics that you derived from these influences while working on the album?
I think we both got really into the Weaker Thens as we were recording our Undivided Attention. And then, yeah. I mean, we've been fans, but I think we kind of either rediscovered or I don't know. It became a thing for us again. And I think John K. Samson is my favorite songwriter. And when we recorded this one, I didn't really love the way I sang on Our Undivided Attention on a lot of it. It was just kind of out of my range. And I think I'm still was in that place where I'm trying to scream into a microphone as opposed to just like singing the song on some of it. And Jack was really good about kind of reining me back in and say, like, how would John K. Samson sing this song? Because it's like they're essentially, you know, a pop punk band with a little bit of an indie rock tinge and a little bit of emo or something. But he sings the songs like here as opposed to like trying to really get out there and go above his means. And aside from songwriting influences, his singing, weirdly enough, is something he's not known for. But that's what really kind of played a huge effect on this record. And I'm very proud of like the vocals on this one.
Well, and it's like, that's a fair comparison too, because like you have kind of a similar vocal timbre, mm-hmm. right? And like I just remember like saying to you a bunch of times, like, hey, Chief, take about 25% off there.
Oh, we're throwing in the Letterkenny references and everything.
That could be an entire episode, but we clearly don't have time.
No.
But yeah, anyway, I think we may have mentioned this before. We kind of have like a Mount Rushmore of songwriters, and like, and he's one of them. And they're not necessarily artists that we sound like, but we just really appreciate the craftsmanship. And and I think maybe, you know, that's something that we try to do is take really kind of like thoughtful, well-constructed songs, like into a rock context, you know, like things that do translate would translate with a more stripped down instrumentation if we wanted to, but clearly, you know, we like loud guitars and drums and bass and stuff. I think one of the ones I advocated for heavily on that list was the Gin Blossoms. And
we got somebody on Twitter today said what something to the effect of he described us to a friend as if Gin Blossoms was a pop punk band that shredded. And I you know, like he probably was like, is that okay? And I was like, no, honestly, that's probably the best description. That rules, thank you.
Love it.
Well, I mean, because we like both kind of have like, you know, sort of a penchant for like the, I think that 90s, you know, pop rock sound, both, you know, in like style and in like in production style, like kind of the way the instruments sound. And and we also like we covered a Gin Blossom song forever.
Yeah, and you know, we may have said this before about Counting Crows, but Gin Blossoms are in my opinion one of those 90s bands that maybe unfairly gets lumped in with, I think I said this in the thing too.
Oh, like, this was the part we argued about because you said, oh no, they're not like that band Semisonic. And I was like, whoa, wait up. Hold on a minute. Like
I'll go to bat for rock argument. Anyway, but yeah, I love Gin Blossoms. That's all I have to say about that.
Everybody knows how you feel about Iron Maiden
but with this, it not just Iron Maiden, but kind of that, I don't know, like I grew up playing heavy metal guitar, and this record we really were very conscious of, let's just throw all the things we like and melt them together and see what it sounds like. And weirdly, I think this is the most like cohesive sounding record we've ever made. But a lot of that came from like, I just really love big guitar leads and, you know, twin harmony guitar parts, and that's a super Iron Maiden sound. And I was like very, very happy and proud to put that spin in this band context, because people get it when they hear it. They're like, oh yeah, yeah, you love Iron Maiden, that makes sense.
Yeah.
but putting it in that context of, oh, there's like these pop rock songs with these crazy guitar solos, what's going on here? But it made sense, and I'm very proud of how it laid in there without being too abstract. Although one New Jersey reviewer didn't like it already, so
that was his one complaint was the guitar.
Yeah, he was like, "You have too many guitar solos in the production slick."
And I was like, "I'll sleep just fine."
Yeah.
Here's the thing: I think that the guitar solo is wildly underused. Honestly, like nobody does it anymore, and they should. I don't know why it's not a thing. Like, have you ever been to a concert with a guitar solo? It's hype. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, how is he doing that? It's amazing.
It's fun. We love live music, and the guitar solo is something that I guess exists in like our niche rock world live, maybe not always on the record, but
and you guys will appreciate this. Like, is it Jade from AFI, right? Like,
he's
a shredder,
right? Yeah, like, I was about to say Stormy's gonna kill me because I have to bring them up in every single episode.
That was never gonna kill you. I just have to bring attention that you did it every time.
Anyway, but that was the first thing I thought of when I heard all of these guitar solos. I was like, oh my god, this is like Puget style guitar.
Going back to what Todd was saying about just trying to incorporate all the things that you love, like that mentality usually doesn't work the first few times you try to do it, right? Because it just ends up really disjointed. And like, I won't say which, but like, Todd and I have feelings about certain things that like songs that we've done in the past where we felt like, that did not succeed. we got it across the finish line, but like,
and we kind of limped over the finish line.
Yeah. but I feel like this new album was more successful in that regard. And like, I think a song that's a good illustration of that is 6-1 Way, because that one's probably a little more left field stylistically, because it's pretty straightforward, kind of just chuggy pop rock. And like, there's some synth parts and like some 12 string acoustic guitars, and
it's got a shoegaze chorus,
right? A strong female vocal, and the big, I always call it like the Stacey's mom key change in the middle, like
I love that.
Yeah, and with that big guitar solo and everything. So anyway, I think we feel more confident in kind of the result with that approach this time around.
And thank you for bringing that one up, because I wanted to raise issue with you guys. It's been fucking stuck in my head for 2 weeks straight. like it will anywhere. Yeah. But I'm like, just like laying in bed at night, trying to fall asleep, and it's just there.
I heard it in my head for 3 years, so.
All right. Yeah, no sympathy from us.
Yeah. Okay, so one more thing, just because we're talking about the AFI. Like, there are things on this record that are, you could call them ripoffs, but I would call them like homages. There are like things that other bands have done that we just love so much that like we wanted to incorporate in our own record. And there are certain licks, and I'm like, oh, that's an AFI lick, or that's a Hold Steady lick. Like, I have like a very fond association with it, because when I hear that part of the song, I hear our song. And I also hear the song that it's modeled after in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not gonna say it on record because I don't want people to be like, "Oh yeah, you guys totally ripped that song off." But I agree with you, Jack. It's almost this that those parts of those songs where I can associate it with the other song, and it comes across. It almost comes across like, "Oh, we pulled it off. We brought out that feeling that I feel in that song that I love, and we made it happen in our own song." And it's kind of a fun emotion that at least we get to have.
Well, and even like writing a song from scratch, I think, most of the time you're like subconsciously conjuring things that you've heard in other songs and stitching them together, usually in a novel way, so that, you think you've come up with something original, but it's actually like this amalgam that your subconscious created. Like,
that's my problem always, is like I think of like lyrics and stuff, and I'll like try to put them in to like an actual melody. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, no, I think that's a thing already. I think that's a thing already.
That's the trick. You got to lean into it.
Yeah, just go for it.
Todd, can I take you off the record real quick? Cause like, I want to know where you see that. And I will like totally edit this part out, but
you don't have to. The one that sticks out to me is actually not the AFI one, but it's the Hold Steady one, which is in the bridge of, what's the song called? Postcards. The clean bridge lick in there is also in a Hold Steady song called
The Weekenders.
The Weekenders.
It's similar. It's not verbatim.
It's not verbatim. It's not the same chords. It's not the same, but it's the same feeling and kind of same guitar tone.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. But yeah. Jack might be referring to AFI and Cicada here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's
what I was gonna ask.
That's the song though. Like it's
the ending, that ending chord.
I was actually, if we didn't bring it up, I was gonna be like, that's the one that hit me the hardest. Like I that's the one that gets stuck in my head. Is Cicada Year, actually, and I don't know what it is about it. I just love it.
Well, we like to call it like the Cicada Year suite, because it's like the intro of the second song, Magnolia, and then the closer is, you know, this is like a very intentional bookend, and like there's a lot of motifs musically that are taken, you know, like the chord progression from the intro is actually introduced in the second half of the last song. But it's like, because the instrumentation is different, you don't necessarily notice, but like, it's the effect is subconscious.
Well, the chords of Magnolia is the bass line from Holding On to Summer.
Right.
And there's a lot of that. And there's honestly stuff like that sprinkled in the rest of the record too, but those four were very intentional and were making this like this. These are the first and last chapter, and we're going to make it all kind of come together.
That was the only thing that made sequencing easy. It's like, well, we know where these ones go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got to fill the middle in.
Well, and I think, because that's not like a foreign concept, because I know at least with Mariana's Trench, that's how they write. So like they'll take one thing and that'll work, and they'll use it throughout the entire album, which mm-hmm. I always think is like, really cool, because it just ties everything together and makes it sound so not uniform, but like it just blends well when you do that. And I think that I didn't notice, but now I'm going to pay more attention.
And the next time I listen through, that segues
a lot
perfectly to my next question, which was there a lot of discussion that went in between like incorporating all these eclectic sounds and making a cohesive album, or did that just kind of happen?
Jack and I's process is kind of, like I said earlier, I kind of just vomit these ideas into existence, and then Jack makes it into something beautiful.
So as far as like those motifs, like I did very little with that. Like I think before we even started recording, you know, Todd had this idea, you know, of you know, this kind of this like these bookends. And an
aesthetic kind of concept and to the thing, I guess.
And I think it's important to say this because it like kind of illustrates the creative process a little bit. But I wasn't like super high on Magnolia. That was like one of the songs when we started writing that I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, man.
I had to force it on him.
Yeah. By the end, like when we finished tracking, I think I told you like this one, like you know, this one clicks, like mm-hmm. you know, it knows what it wants to be, and mm-hmm. So
it took work to get it there, but once we found it,
yeah. So anyway, I would say that like kind of the Todd had a really good grip on kind of the high level vision for that whole thing.
I love that. That's like making it flow like that and be something that is, entertained is not the right word, but like goes through the entire album is just like the foresight that it takes to do
it's super nerdy. And it's for other equally nerdy people.
I love like 70s prog rock, and I love like fantasy novels, and I love like, you know, like I'm a nerd. I like those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, even like lyrically, there's a lot of stuff that repeats itself within, if you go through the, I guess it's all on Bandcamp. Like the lyrics are on Bandcamp. If you listen to it and you're reading along, you're like, oh, he brought that up again. And this is coming back around. And that's all very intentional, but it's also not necessarily something that I knew I wanted it all to fit together, but I didn't necessarily know how. And Jack played a big part in kind of helping me formulate my ideas into something that was tangibly executable.
I think so. It sounds,
you know, it's a word now.
Like looking back at it now, is that at least from an external viewpoint, it definitely has the look like of a concept album, you know, because it does lean so heavily on kind of seasonal motifs and that kind of thing, but it's got embedded inside of it these little like sort of vignettes or you know, character pieces. It's like you think about a song like Postcards, and
it's clearly,
you know, it's a tour song, but it is like more generally about being like separated from, you know, people that you love and kind of knowing, you know, where your heart is, even if that's not where your physical being is. And how that is maybe in terms of subject matter a bit of a departure from the broader motif, but it still has the same kind of vibe. And that song is like such a kind of an emotional journey for me anyway, because there's so many discrete parts and like the arrangement is kind of sort of complex. That might be like my favorite song that we've ever written for, you know, several reasons. But it was one that I knew would be a bit of a deep cut for some people just because it's not immediately accessible. Like, it's got this long intro that you could never use as a single.
In a lo-fi effect.
Right. It's kind of like, I think of it as, you know, like a minute and a half in or whatever when the band kicks in. It's like, well, you know, if you've listened this far, like, we know we've got you for the next 4 minutes, you know, here's something to reward you for your patience. You know, and of course there are always songs like that you're probably more attached to than anyone else will ever be.
But what I like, you know, it is a departure from the overall motif, but it's in one sense, but it's also, but then it goes directly into Wolves, which really kind of tackles a similar subject matter. We call it Wolves because that was a working title, but Wolves Outside the Door. But it tackles a similar subject matter, but sort of from a different emotional point in your decision-making or realization. But then that song fits with the rest of everything else. So it's almost like it's, with Postcards, it's not necessarily a departure because it's 2 degrees separated from it via this song or via this song and via this guitar lick that actually shows up again. And I don't know, just like random things like that I'm super stoked about.
Well, and I also like want to give like a quick shout out to the mastering engineer Hans, who like helped us do all those crossfades and try to like try to make things flow seamlessly between the tracks. Because like we knew we were going to press it to vinyl, and like that was the listening experience that we were most intentional about. That's sort of a weird thing you have to do now, is consider like the digital listening experience and like the out of context listening experience for like playlists and stuff, but then like the vinyl listening experience. And we were like, well, you know, vinyl is really what we care about. for this particular release. So we're going to make sure that this sounds good as an A side and as a B side. You know, whereas like maybe with an all digital release, you might front load it, you know, because you know that people aren't going to make it to tracks 8, 9, 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, with this one, it's like each side is kind of a mini album. You know, they each have their own opener, they each have their own closer, that kind of thing.
I want to reorient a minute, if that's okay.
You want to talk about AFI sure. for a little bit?
Yeah, no, just AFI from here on out, please. but you guys have so many collaborations on this album. What inspired you to bring on so many outside talents, and how do you feel that they contributed to the overall atmosphere?
I think that was, honestly, one, touring on Undivided Attention, we got to meet a lot of friends on the road and things like that. And we kind of had an idea to get more people on it, but it's just like, because it's just really hard, and we're parents and we're, you know, have things to do, it was tough to do. But so Brian, who's on Cicada Year, he does that spoken word part, but he's, and we talked about it from the last podcast, but he's the singer for that band Bud Bronson and the Good Timers, and their record that came out was sort of a big inspiration on this record of ours. Not necessarily in any particular way, but it was, they made kind of, I like to say, their Darker Autumn record. And I very much wanted to capture that kind of feeling. Not necessarily that they did, but, and also that they just kind of go for it and play guitar. And
that's kind of relative. Like, we were already kind of moody to begin with, so we got moody.
Right. but, you know, like, but they're good buds of ours. We did the split with them. So, and his vocal delivery in his band is kind of pseudo spoken word. So it really felt good for that part. Mm-hmm. And we were like, dude, just record it on your iPhone and send it to us and we'll fix it. And it was great. Camille, who sings on two songs, she's my coworker. And she's a good friend, and she also tours and plays with like Julian Baker. And she did one Phoebe Bridgers tour, I believe. Anyway, she's super cool and very talented, and she plays violin primarily. And I did the Weaker Than's cover earlier this year or last year, and she sang and played violin on that, but she just sang on this one. And we had her over like one night, and we're like, hey, can you do these two songs? And she was into it, and she killed it, and it was, the tone and timbre of her voice was just perfect for those parts, and that was really cool. And then Lydia, when I used to play in that band from Ohio, Two Cow Garage, Lydia is also from Columbus, Ohio, and they're buddies up there, and so we became friends. And she, it was kind of funny, she was in Nashville and tweeted, was like, hey, I'm in Nashville, anything to do? And I was like, do you want to sing on our record? And she said, yeah. And then she got sick and couldn't come, so she went back home and just did it from her place. and it was really cool. And she's got a record coming out this year that's really awesome. She's definitely more in that kind of alt rock, alt country thing. But she's got a huge, huge, powerful voice. And it really laid into the song nicely. And then Johnny on the Reap. Johnny plays in this band from North Carolina called Almost People. And they're buds of ours. And the Reap has always kind of been, like, at least the chorus has always kind of been our, like, this is kind of our Blink-182 chorus. and Johnny's got that pop punk voice.
I have an alternate take of you singing, like, All the Small Things over that song.
Do you really?
There are things that will, like, that are on my hard drive that will never see the light of day.
Oh, I want that hard drive.
So
we'll release it as like a Bandcamp B-side in 20 years when Bandcamp doesn't exist.
So there's cool. A couple.
I was gonna say, just make it Patreon content, make people pay for it.
I know. We need to get on that and just release all my shit takes.
Todd's shit takes. So, it's really interesting hearing, like with Johnny, or any of them, but you know, I listened a lot to Almost People's last full length, and so you get really used to hearing, you know, this voice in the context of their band, and then you hear it over one of your own songs, and it's kind of a surreal experience.
Yeah, it's cool.
But the thing I love about guest vocals is that it keeps your records from being too samey. Like, it, the listener almost gets a little too comfortable, a little too acclimated to, like, you know, like they think they know what to expect, and bringing in those other textures. I mean, it's just like bringing in, a different guitar, or some other like acoustic element. It kind of forces them to reorient a little bit. And I love that.
Go ahead, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Well, so I was just going to say too, that I've always loved female vocals in general, but particularly like, female male duets in a rock context. And like, basically, like I've been chasing after that, Jim Adkins and the woman from The Rentals does all the background vocals on Jimmy Eat World Records. I've basically been chasing after that on every song that we do.
You've been chasing that light.
Yeah. Nice. And so like we've had, female guest vocals on, we had them on April
Girls 5th. Boys.
We had them on Girls and Boys. And several tracks on this album. It's a nice kind of counterbalance.
What I was going to say is it's interesting what you're saying about Jack, the surprise aspect, because I'm very conflicted with the way it exists now. It's like, because on Spotify, it's like, oh, this song has somebody on it, I'm going to expect it. And
yeah,
but if you're listening to on vinyl, it pops out at you, and you don't necessarily, unless you're reading the liner notes in real time, like I do, you don't necessarily have that coming. But on the other hand, it's very cool because on Spotify or whatever medium, it tags those people, and you can go check out their band. Mm. And that's also another purpose of that is like, here's our friends, but also they do music too, and you should also support them. But
that is one of my like favorite things, though, is hearing a song and hearing like a vaguely familiar vocal and being like, where have I heard that before? Mm-hmm. And like, I think about there was a Ben Folds song that had John McRae from Cake. Or like, yeah, had like her Weird Al Yankovic or something like that. And I remember like looking it up and be like, oh my God, now I can't unhear it. You know?
Yeah. I was about to compare that to like uncredited voice actors, because that always drives me nuts when they don't credit the voice actor. Because I'm like, I know that voice. Who is it?
This is completely an aside, but that reminds me, the voice actor thing and like this, who is that voice? I play a lot of Skyrim. Because but also my kids, they watch like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, and the voice of Pete is also the voice of like Ulfred Battleborn and like that whole thing. What? And so like every time like Pete's like,
well, her Mickey face, Mouse, man.
And I just, that's the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
But, like, I couldn't put my finger on it until like I like just IMDb'd it and I'm like, holy shit, the same guy. So every time I hear it, like, Pete's like bumbling onto the screen, he's like, oh, hey, Mickey the Mouse. And I'm just like, in the back of my mind, he's going to be like, Ulfred, patron of the great clan Battleborn, or whatever. Never does, though.
That I can hear that perfectly.
That's hilarious. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's so good.
I'm going to wrap up this whole discussion with a neat little bow here, as long as you guys are ready. But
yeah, do it.
What is one thing that you guys hope that your fans derive after listening to this album?
Oof, not to get like too sentimental and everything, but I hope it makes them feel okay. You know, like everything's so weird right now. And I think the point, I said this to a friend who sent me a nice text about it today too. And she was saying, I really love the record. It's such a crazy time to put out music and all this stuff, but it makes me feel good. I was like, that's all we can really hope for, right? Like that you have an emotional response to this thing that we made that's positive, and it makes your life a little bit better. That's what I just hope it makes people okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I can like adequately express that we made the record for them. You know what I mean? Like, we made the music for people you know, that would ultimately enjoy it. Because like we don't make it for our health. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we're not getting rich on it.
No, it's just, I think I had become more aware, you know, after being in a band for, you know, 6 or 7 years, the longest tenure with any band, you know, putting out a few albums, that you do have, you know, an impact. And whether it's, you know, 10 people or 100 people or 1,000 people, like those are real people, you know what I mean? Behind the streaming numbers and the album sales and that kind of thing. And so I think during the production process, we really tried to focus on that. You know, making something that we were proud of and making something that people would ultimately enjoy.
And we did do.
We did, but it's over now.
But it, yeah. Until that song got stuck in my head for 2 weeks straight and put a hole through the wall. No. All right, so I got one more question for you guys. It's the little fun one I've been asking everybody this year. You get to quarantine with one artist, living or dead. Who would you pick?
Jack, I'm letting you go first.
Oh man, actually quarantining with an artist actually sounds terrible. Just,
I honestly don't know how my family quarantines would be.
Like, we're like generally very poor housemates. I don't know, living or dead. What about like living undead, like with the artist?
Yeah, go for it. I like that better.
Yeah, let's do it.
How cognizant is this undead artist? Like, are they undead, like, trying to eat you? Or are they undead in...
No, it's like you know, at the end of Shaun of the Dead, where he's, like a benevolent zombie? He's like...
I was thinking, like, warm zombie or warm body zombie.
Yeah.
Highly underrated zombie movie.
Like, he's grown up.
My favorite of all time.
And his heart is fixed, and he's working on not being a zombie anymore.
Yeah, and then he can kind of, like, give you some perspectives from the undead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're taking this to a whole new dimension now. Now I'm trying to think of, like, all right, well, who
Galaxy
had a
brain.
Unique afterlife experience that I want to really find out about?
You guys, my next guests are going to be so confused when I pose them with this iteration of question.
Like, man, this got really specific.
Right.
Like, how many times have you asked that other question? This is where it turned out.
This is probably not the answer that I would get every day, but I was listening to Elliot Smith, and I think picking Elliot Smith's brain for a time would be cool. I don't think necessarily literally would be great.
Like, picking a brain when you're talking about zombies.
Oh yeah, that's good. I like that. That's wrong with that.
Yeah, although I do have to, I feel like Elliot Smith would have like a very would have a, like a unique take on the circumstances that we're living in right now.
I know. It he'd probably have something very morbid to say about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to go with that for my answer though.
Do you have an answer to this question? I'm curious.
I'm leaning towards like zombie David Bowie. Like, I feel like that would be something. My days are
zombie. Movie. Zombie Freddie Mercury.
That's
what I was gonna say.
Speaking of zombie David Bowie, there was a Hard Times article that was like, they brought David Bowie back to life, but it was. And I don't even remember which era David Bowie, but it was like the wrong era, so they had to kill him again. I'd like butchered the joke, but the gist is there.
No, that's totally shit. I was wondering where you're going with speaking of a zombie David Bowie, but
he's here.
Yeah.
I've got him in the closet. You want to see?
Send it back. Send it back.
Wrong one.
There is no wrong Freddie Mercury, though. That one is...
That's true. There's no wrong Freddie Mercury.
He's always the best one.
I'm sobbing watching the dramatization of the Live Aid concert.
I know, me too.
Not even the real version, like the...
What about you guys? David Bowie, Stormy, what about you?
This is going to be, like, ridiculously stupid, but I think I'm going to pick Nikki Sixx. I think it would be interesting, but I really don't want him to be on heroin when it happens.
Wait, are we talking about the basis for Motley Crue, or is that...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and what's fun is, like, he's a zombie, but he's actually a living zombie currently, so...
Oh, yes.
Oh, he's a zombie. Yeah, okay, so, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go Nikki Sixx.
I think it still checks out.
I think it would be good. I think it would be fun in the least. Interesting.
Did you read The Dirt?
If not bad. I haven't read the book yet. I watched the movie.
Yeah, the book is very much of all the reasons I don't want to quarantine with Nikki Sixx.
That's what I was saying. Hopefully he's not on heroin when it happens, but...
But that's a chance you're willing to take, is what you're telling me.
I'm sure there's more in the book, and I do have it on my Amazon wish list right now.
We call that Nikki Sixx roulette, right? And if you're going to be heroin, like, Nikki, or...
Yeah,
it's just like David Bowie, really.
It's essentially the same David Bowie. I just got to pick. I hope I get the right one.
So, Stormy, I never admitted this to you before, so we'll do it right now. When we watched The Dirt, we did it on, like, a Netflix watch party.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it gave me so much anxiety that I just walked away and didn't tell you guys. I only saw about 15 minutes of that movie.
That's pretty par for the course for a Motley Crue doc, though.
I mean, exactly. That's fair.
I was like,
this is too much right now.
Question, was it, like, the very opening scene? Because that's a lot.
It was shortly after. I came back, like, for a minute at a time, and then I was like, nah,
We talked about that a lot with, like, a band like The Replacements. Like, we really love the band, but I just know that, like, those guys would stress me out so much in real life. Like, we could never be friends.
Yeah,
I'll defend only, it sounds whatever, but we did get to play... we got to play with Tommy Stinson and that other band, and Tommy Stinson was super kind and super nice. But I think Paul Westerberg would probably be a big dick.
Well, those things are not mutually exclusive. Like, you can be, like, really nice and a total powder keg.
that's very fair.
Like, I think realistically in this question, like, if I wanted to pick somebody to, like, do a collaboration with, like, right now, I think MGK would be the vibe I'd want to go for as far as collaboration goes, because I really like the rock style that he's doing right now, because it also mixes in kind of the R&B rap stuff too, and I just find that really interesting. But he would be horrible to live with, so I don't know if I could do it.
I didn't consider the, like, the collaboration angle.
Yeah,
I was thinking about, like, just from, like, a hanging perspective.
Just hanging out.
Well, like, I'm picturing, like, me and, like, you know, undead Freddie Mercury sitting across the breakfast table from one another, and, like, he's, like, spooning oatmeal into his mouth, but it's, like, dripping out the bottom
because there's a hole in his skin.
Do you think he could sing?
Oh, God, I don't know.
I'm thinking, like, even, like, guitar players, bassists, like, their fingers are probably falling off.
If there's anything that could survive, like, some kind of nuclear holocaust, it's Freddie Mercury's vocal cords.
That's true. Them things, like, are strong.
But what if the sound, like, is coming out of here because there's a hole?
Well, that's just...
I mean,
it's more just Freddy being Freddy.
Extra layers, it's fine. You can just strip those off.
You got, like, the reverb from right here and the actual mouth.
Honestly, he's probably... Don't even need to plug in himself. He's doing all the parts of Bohemian Rhapsody out of different holes.
But I could watch it, though. Like, wouldn't that be fascinating?
And, like,
when you look inside, you actually find out that there's, like, five tiny Freddie Mercurys inside of him. Actually, all
Freddie Mercury singing all the parts.
Like, this makes so much more sense now.
Well, he opens his mouth, and they're, like, all four arranged in the Freddie Mercury or the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody video thing. Like,
but this whole thing is actually depicted in, like, using stop motion animation, like a la like the sequences from, like, the. From, like, Beetlejuice or like The Nightmare Before Christmas or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a Tim Burton film.
Tim Burton film for sure.
So I want to circle this back. How, what song of yours would you use to soundtrack that film?
Do we have a song that talks about death? I feel like we kind of do, but we don't.
I mean, certainly not like undeath.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all like they're all a little bit about death.
There's,
like,
there's no necromancy. Like super aware of our mortality.
I love how hard you guys are thinking about this.
These are the important questions that we get to think about when we're not.
I'm actually thinking through our entire catalog right now.
Yeah. It's very important that you choose, that you make the right selection.
Yeah.
Because if you make the wrong one, it'll come back to haunt you. And then next year, you're going to have to say, I just want to add an addendum. I would not choose that song.
Right.
Mm. I guess if it's Freddie Mercury, then he gets to, like, maybe kind of sing on it. Like, kind of just in the background. Or maybe he hums to it while it's on the radio. And the song that I would want Freddie Mercury to sing on is probably to do a high part in Magnolia that I just couldn't do. And so he's going to do it. That's my answer.
I like it.
I like it.
Now, honestly, now you guys have got me thinking, rethinking the question. Of
you know, actually, I think I would just like pick one of the, one of like the really like raw kind of early tracks, like Plastic Knives or something like that.
Oh yeah. Just like, hey, do this thing. Now I'm thinking about the question in your original context, and all I can think about is like, what artist would I want to babysit my kids while I work?
Which artist would be a good babysitter?
Zombie artist.
Who's going to be nurturing enough to make my daughter a peanut butter jelly sandwich at 11:30? I just don't know.
Oh,
I know. I know the answer.
Who's that?
It's Dave Grohl.
You know what? You're
not 15 minutes right. Before this, Paul. I was watching that video of him doing his little drum battle response.
Oh, to that girl?
Yeah.
I forget her name. I follow her on Instagram. That and whole like, situation is so awesome.
More, the more dad bod that Dave Grohl gets, the more relatable I find him. also, like,
I don't know if you've seen the. It was when they were talking about how he bought the Sound City. Mm-hmm. Set up, and it was that whatever documentary that was, but his daughter walks in and she said, "Dad, you said we'd go swimming," and like he's like trying to record an album and she's just sitting there like, "You said you'd make me a smoothie."
Yeah.
And he's like, that. "Your kids then, well, don't care there's that you're a, famous."
There's a documentary called like The Other F Word that's about punk bands when they start having families, and like that. You see like Fat Mike and like his little girl like waking like coming in and waking him up at you know at like 5 a.m. or something and
I didn't even find that. That's
yeah man like kids something don't I'd care love. Yeah. They don't care how punk you think you are.
I love it.
I want to go back to Dave Grohl for a minute though, because I do have a story. Stormy, I may have told you this one before. He actually lives around here, and my grandfather's my grandfather's friend unknowingly lived next door to him for like a long time, or maybe next door to his mother or something like that, had no idea that he was famous. So he was just like his friend Dave, and they'd go for walks together down the That's neighborhood, amazing. Just talking about life and everything. And he was like telling someone about it someday, and they made the connection that it was fucking Dave Grohl. And this guy just like had no idea that he was famous because he's such a normal, grounded person.
Yeah, but like props to Dave Grohl for having a relationship with somebody and them having no idea who he is.
Exactly.
Well, like, that's probably so cool like the
for
best
him, though.
That's yeah.
probably the best way to stay sane with that level of celebrity is to, you know, try to be as anonymous as possible.
Yeah. No kidding.
If they don't know you're famous, don't tell them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like me with my attention seekingness, just like, hey, you know who I am? You know?
You just accidentally like drop your driver's license in front of
you. There's no way you would actually do that.
So it's one of those things like, by no means is our band famous, but with the attention seeking thing, like I'm an attention seeker, except for when it comes to like promoting the band. then I get so self-conscious that like, oh, am I doing too much? Is this, am I being a jerk or am I, you know, and it's one of those weird things where I have to get the rest of the guys to be like, no, it's okay to make that Facebook post. Like, do the thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's relatable. Speaking of, do you guys want to drop your socials for us real quick so that our listeners know where to find you?
We're on the internet at Google search benchmark. No, you may be not even there. Yeah, just a few pages down. We are at Benchmarks Music on both Twitter and Instagram, and I believe that's kind of the Facebook thing too. But if you just search Benchmarks on Facebook, it'll
pop
up.
You might get a realtor. That's the other.
Oh yeah, and also a bad bar downtown Nashville that hopefully closed. And I'm at Todd Farrell Jr. on Twitter and Instagram. Jack is, I think,
I'm not on Twitter, and very intentionally.
It's good for you.
All right, guys. Well, it was super nice talking to you. Thanks again.
Yeah, good to see you guys again.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, you as well.
Stay healthy.
You too. Good night.
Blues. Tell me something. Are you happy in your skin? Do you believe the things you sing about when the lights begin to dim? I've been stumbling in this darkness, I can barely get to sleep. And when I can, the things I dream about ain't what they used to be.
Oof, who just screamed?
Pancakes.
Pancakes.
He's acting like he's hungry, but I know he was fed earlier.
No, what he's telling you is that you should go over our socials real quick so that you can go feed him.
He's already, I'm not feeding him again. I might give him a treat. I refuse to let them get fat. I'm not doing it. They can eat the amount of food that they're given. It's the vet directed amount. That's what they get, but they are spoiled, so they get treats. But I will go over our socials.
Hold on. Before you do that, can I just point out real quick that like, My Favorite Murder has Elvis and his cookie, but we could definitely just end every podcast with Pancakes, stop screaming.
Pancakes, shut up. Like, yeah, they purposefully get Elvis to make noise and we're just like, God, Pancakes,
stop
yelling.
He's just chiming in.
Okay, yeah, but you're not here when it's constant. He has like object permanence issues. So like, if he doesn't see you directly, he has to be reminded that someone is here. It's so funny. And, but it's like, why would you go in the other room? Just stay here. You know we're here. Whatever.
He just walks away and then starts screaming.
Yeah. Well, it'll be like 20 minutes and then he'll start screaming and you're just like, we're still here, Pancakes. So I wonder what he does when we're not home. I wonder if he just screams.
Oh, that's horrible.
No, I doubt it. He probably just sleeps. Anyway, if you want to find us, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at I'm Not Okay Pod. You can find us on Facebook at I'm Not Okay I Podcast. And you can email us at imnotokaypod@gmail.com. If you want to find me, I'm at Slummy Thomas on Instagram and TikTok.
And I am Brashbat on Instagram.
Yes.
And as always, if you want to do us a huge, huge favor, remember to rate and subscribe to the podcast and
tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Because honestly, word of mouth super helps. Because if you think that we're doing something cool, then your friends might listen and just let them know that we're trying to do something for smaller musicians and, get them in and we'll get some more visibility for those newer artists that are popping off.
Or, you know, if you guys just respond in overwhelming favor to this episode in particular, I don't know, maybe we'll just have Todd and Jack come on as regulars from here on out.
Yeah.
They can just take over for us. We can actually make this the Toddcast. We'll just step back.
Let them interview everyone.
Profit off of it, of course. We'll retain the rights. But, I say as if we've profited far. We have not.
That's all right. Here's the thing. We don't really do this because we want the profits from it. I mean, here's the obvious goal is so that we can, so that we can reach more people in order to get these musicians to a broader group of people. But we really do it because we like it. And we like getting to talk to these musicians, and we like getting to just tell people about them, really. And so it would just be awesome if we could tell it to more people, I guess, because this podcast isn't really about us. It's about the people that are making music to make us happy, you know?
Because you know what they say, two is better than one, and three is better than two.
Three is the... I don't think that's part of
the... What? I don't think it is, but we can end on that.
All right. See you later, Space Cowboys.
Excuse me?